Hello and welcome to Out to Lunch. This time we return to the comfort of our own homes to deliver you in for lunch and send top-notch food to our brilliant guests as we chat over takeaways and a video link. Today I'm eating across a video feed with an actress who made her name in the hugely successful ITV series Cold Feet, but has also published 3 cookbooks, so seriously likes her food. It's Faye Ripley.
I found yesterday, a note. And it was October 21st, 94. It says, okay. Dearest Faye, I am so underlined sorry that your wonderful prostitute has not made it into the final cut of Frankenstein. I owe you a drink. Much love, Kenneth Branagh.
Faye Ripley, hello.
Hi, Jay Rayner. Look at you with your background there. We're all so interested.
It's my proper office. These are my papers.
So there's sort of shelves with files and books and you pretending to be like a journalist, writer, like proper intelligent. But I swear I see porn.
That's my own private collection. There is no porn, just for the record. There is no. Actually,
There's always one porn.
There's one thing, which is a comic book collection, which is somewhat pornographic, that I actually gave to my late mother as a Christmas gift called The Lost Girls. Look it up. It was actually banned at one point, and that's why I gave it to my mother, Claire. And it was a lovely Christmas, that one.
So what did she do when she opened the porn at Christmas? Thank you.
I explained that it was this very interesting collection of stories, comic book stories, about 3 young women and their sexual awakening from literature. And I can only remember 2 of them. It's Wendy and it's Alice. Wendy from Peter Pan, Alice from Alice in Wonderland. I wonder who the 3rd one was. But she was intrigued and it did stay on the coffee table in our living room for anybody to have a look at.
It's amazing. Well, thanks for talking about your porn, Jay.
Well, I'd like to
appreciate
your
honesty so early in our conversation.
Can I go all the way back to your childhood and where you grew up as we await your food, which should only be about 5 minutes away. Mm. Growing up, you pretty much said that you grew up with almost no identity whatsoever. The best you can say is you can almost be called a Londoner because you were born in Wimbledon.
Yeah. I never lived in Wimbledon. That was why I can almost be called a Londoner. I came out of my mother in Wimbledon and then was whisked back to Surrey, which is where I was brought up. And Surrey for me, and I'm sure I will get a lot of people responding to this quite aggressively from Surrey.
Mm. Yeah, sure.
But I feel I never felt it had an identity. It doesn't have an accent. It doesn't have, what does a Surrey person, house, accent, anything, dish? Give me anything that you can identify with Surrey.
I have said that I haven't reviewed very much in Surrey because despite having money, there's money in Surrey. There's cash there, sure. Yeah, there really aren't very many good restaurants. And mostly I think it's because of the pull of London that you can get back into there in 45 minutes on a train. Was it that kind of childhood yours? I know your parents split, or your both parents split. They both remarried in interesting ways because your mum married an Italian guy who was bringing Italian food into the country, wasn't he?
Oh, very much so. Yes, he was like one of the first guys to import sort of fresh pasta, and alongside being a sort of stereotype of an Italian musician singing One Talamera, and he won New Faces, my stepdad, at the same time. It was hilarious.
He won New Faces?
He did.
I mean, your showbiz family, because your aunt, was this on your mother's side, was the 60s pop star Twinkle?
It's on my dad's side.
Your dad's side.
Was Blimey. Twinkle, yes, absolutely, who was a sort of child pop star. but yes, so my mum married an Italian, so I was eating a lot of Italian food, and where my friends definitely weren't. And my dad married my stepmom, who's still my stepmom, and she's German. So I was introduced to a lot of things that sounded sort of...
Did you have Spätzle?
Spätzle? Yes. It's like, oh, you're having Lederhosen for dinner. It's like the words that I thought were other things. That's what I mean. You know, sort of you get a short.
So literally in the sense of Bart Simpson, you were invited to eat your shorts.
Very much so.
I couldn't let that pass.
Very leathery they were too.
Let me tell you what you're going to have today. I'm sure you're agog. Happily, when we asked for, dietary requirements, you sent us none. eats anything, you said, which was fantastic.
Yes.
So there is a rather classy Indian in the centre of town called Benares in Mayfair.
This will be interesting.
And some of Benares's finest is on its way towards you.
I'm quite scared of hot food, so this will be interesting.
No, you've got, I mean, it's not particularly hot. I mean, you could have added that in your dietary. It's quite scared of spicy food.
I didn't want to be difficult, Jay.
Oh, yeah, well, I've noticed this. I heard you on an interview say if you go and eat at someone's house and it's awful, you won't say anything about it. And you tell your kids not to say something's awful, just say, thank you, that was lovely. But, you know, you might have hung
yourself
here.
Until I leave, and then I will really lay in. Obviously.
To people at home or the person who's just fed you?
Not to the person who's fed me. They'll never know.
That's what I mean.
Yes.
So that inveterate politeness that, you know, you can take the girl out of Surrey, but you can't take Surrey out of the girl, may just have caused you digestive distress because you've got Indian food heading your way. But I have to say, I haven't gone for massively, you know, fiery stuff at all.
I love Indian food. I'm very excited. I don't eat enough of it, so it's actually a really good choice.
Well, Benares is pretty damn classy, and I've been told that their biryani is a special thing, so...
I haven't heard a knock at the door. Shall I check?
Why don't you?
Yes, I'm going to check.
And see.
I'm excited. Okay.
You'll find the boxes are numbered, and I can take them through. And basically say, why don't you find box number one, which is your starter?
God, it smells so good.
Right. So your number one is a veg samosa with chickpeas, yogurt and tamarind.
I mean, this is posh.
So I've got chicken tikka, which has come with a lovely kind of muslin wrapped piece of lemon. We should probably say we've met once before properly, haven't we?
Oh, we have. Basically your office.
Well, it was.
The Ivy Club.
Anyway, I'm holding it up so you can have a look.
That's different to mine.
It is different to yours. I thought it would be better for texture if you got one thing and I got another.
Oh, my God.
How is it?
I mean, that's just a different thing. You see, this is the thing. I don't eat this kind of Indian food enough because this is unrecognisable to me. I've never had anything like this. It's delicious. Mm.
So is it just that it's particularly... It's more subtle than the stuff you're used to?
It's much more subtle. It's... you get waves. There's like a citrus wave, a lime wave through it. There's a coriander on, which I love. I know it's that splits the audience. It's got crunch because it's got this sort of deep fried pastry, but it's also got this sort of warm lentils and dairy through it. I mean, it's divine.
Ripley, are you auditioning for my gig on MasterChef?
Absolutely.
Well, you can fuck off. It's mine.
Delicious.
Your stepdad was on New Faces.
Yeah.
Your aunt on the other side was a pop star. Mm. There was no expectation that you were going to go into acting, was there? I think your dad wanted to send you to Swiss finishing school, didn't he?
He did. He was keen for me to be able to fold a napkin into the shape of a swan, apparently.
Ah, the dying swan. It's very important.
There was very low expectation based on one thing. And that's that I was a girl. From where I was brought up, that was very much it. You would marry well. And in fact, that was the advice I was given by my careers officer at school. I was at a bit low rent private school, all girls, a Catholic school. I'm not Catholic, so I got all the guilt without asking for it. I made the decision to sort of just go to my local tech college. And that was quite radical in my family.
But you said there was a particular teacher, Susan Ford, who, a drama teacher, who made you feel good about something you'd done.
Yes. I think I would have gone with whatever I thought I was good at. And it was Susan Ford was this amazing woman who was just a brilliant teacher. And I don't think it was because I was particularly good. I think that she just thought, well, someone better tell her she's good at something.
What's really striking to me from looking at your story is your absolute stubborn determination. You auditioned for the Guildhall 3 times before getting in. I mean, you were right because you've had a brilliant career. You've got awards and BAFTA nominations and everything. So you were right and they were wrong. But What made you carry on?
I wonder now, because I've got a daughter who is about to embark on a very similar sort of journey. Would I advise her if she doesn't get in on the, you know, until the third time to keep going? I don't even know. But that young woman that I was then, I didn't see an alternative. In the meantime, while I was failing, I did many other life things and had many other jobs. And that I don't regret, weirdly, even though I was utterly miserable until I was 30. But
were you actually utterly miserable, or were you going through life and thinking this is tough?
I hated my 20s. Oh, they were so awful. It's fine in retrospect because of the joy that came afterwards, because now life is good. But no, it wasn't great.
You found a living as a clown. You were a quite successful clown, weren't you? Weren't you able to get a mortgage with the occupation clown on the application?
Absolutely right. Yes. Mm. In the 80s, they gave mortgages to people who walked in with red noses.
Now, before we carry on, let me tell you about your main course. Mm. You should have three boxes. So number two will be your chicken biryani, and it's flavoured with rose and mint, and there should be a roasted
cumin.
I can
smell the mint. That's my favourite herb.
I've done my research, and obviously I knew that.
No, I didn't.
Wow. You will also have masala bayan, which is aubergine tossed in dry spices with coriander and ginger, and then a dal makhani, which is 24-hour cooked buttered black lentils.
And there's some raita?
Yes, there's a roasted cumin raita. I have a lamb shank nihari with bone marrow and spices. I like the fact they say with spices as though you think, oh, no spices.
I'm more interested in the fact that they said with bone marrow. You see, that's stuff I don't want to know.
You don't like bone marrow, or you don't want to know?
Just don't want to talk about it.
You don't want to talk about bone marrow? Do you think it's a bit personal?
I just feel it's a bit organy.
Do you have a problem with offal?
100%.
Oh.
Yeah.
And you from Surrey and everything. There are a couple of stories I have to interrogate you about from your pre, you know, everything's all right days. You were arrested while dressed as a clown. Is that right? For a major crime.
Yeah. I had done a party. My clown name is, I say, because you die with your clown name, Mischief.
As in Mischief. Good.
Yes. The children get it really quickly, Jay. The
Do
joke.
They? Okay.
Yeah.
But they're actually there in front of you with all the makeup and the hair and the shoes. So it's probably easier to...
Maybe. I did a kids' party over in Wimbledon, I think it was, and it was in a big house. And the thing that I remembered about it was that they tipped me very heavily. I was very pleased with the party, seemed to go perfectly well. What defined the party was that I always wasted time in a 2.5-hour party. My main trick for wasting time was to say, hands up, who wants to go to the toilet? Now, one 4-year-old puts their hands up, 25 people want to go to the toilet. Amazing. That is an hour of my time. The parents love me because they go, oh, it's so great because none of the children wet themselves and the entertainer was so sweet.
Did you learn that at clown school or did you make that up?
I just worked it out. Okay. Anyway, so I went, who wants to go to the toilet? And they said, you can't use the downstairs toilet. Could you go through the bedroom? There's an ensuite through the bedroom. So off I went to their very smart house. Took 25 kids to the toilet, came back, finished the party, got a big tip. Fabulous. Next day, knock at the door, 6 big burly policemen to search my house and look for 75 grand's worth of diamonds and jewellery. It all got quite scary and I was just a young clown trying to make my way, you know, in the
circus.
Were
you taken in for questioning?
I don't think I was taken in for questioning, but it got really scary and... I mean, when they saw me and saw that my main, like, Harry the Hedgehog, my puppet from my puppet show, and they were like, I don't think this Mischief is, like, you know, nicking.
Yeah. It's only a clown name. It's not actually a description of the way she lives.
Exactly. But it turned out it was an insurance job and they buried them in the garden, and they'd set me up, and the loo downstairs was working, and it was all like, you know, it's like an episode of Midsummer Murders.
Did they come back and tell you this, or did you read about it in the papers, or what happened?
I think they realised quite quickly and informed my parents that it was all okay, and they'd found the necklace in the garden, and they were actually going to arrest the parents.
That's extraordinary.
And I think it wasn't even the kid's birthday. I don't think I've made that up. I think even that was pretend.
What, so they'd set the kid up as an accomplice yeah. in the setup?
Yeah.
You made the point that you do have letters after your name. It's not only Jimmy Nesbitt who has letters after his name, does he?
Hang on, I'm going to hold
what, have you got a certificate or something?
I've got letterheading. Yes, Faye Ripley, ASTO, the Association of Suntan Operators. I mean, I haven't got any other letters, so I'm going to roll with that. And I'm very proud. And it's on my letterheading. So you got a problem with that?
No. I'm more intrigued by the story that one of your regulars, one particular, what do we call them, salon, salon de tanning,
sure,
was George Michael.
Yes. George Michael was a regular visitor to the sun tanning / health centre. I say health centre. There was a lot of mass. It was, I mean, my husband says my wife worked in a massage parlour, but it wasn't like there was massage. But anyway, and there were sunbeds, and there was a gym, and the only place you were allowed to smoke was in the gym. And George Michael used to come in and use the sunbeds a lot, and everybody was very giddy about it. I was very Surrey-esque, very sort of English in my response. I used to, every single time, poor guy, I'd go, "Oh, hello, name please. Are you a
regular?" Did you think you were being kind and
yes.
just, you know, treating him like a normal person,
yes.
like a normal chap?
I wasn't doing it to be facetious. I was just sort of, I was inside, I was dying. I was a huge fan of George Michael, but I didn't want him to feel that, you know, I was a fan. I felt just too embarrassed about that. So I would very play that down with, you know, "Are you paying by cash or card? Sorry, your name again?" I did quite a lot of that, which must have become tedious. Anyway, he would use the sunbeds. I would give him his towels to wipe himself dry because there's quite a lot of sweat involved with those sunbeds. And at the end, I would, I'm afraid, take the towels yeah. and sell them. Sorry.
How do you sell a
towel?
To
my friends. I mean, mainly to my friends. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have a stall in a market selling George Michael sweaty towels. I didn't. But to my friends that loved George Michael, I would either put them in a frame and gift them for birthdays or just take cash for them. Sometimes, I'm going to be honest, I've never said this out loud, I would pretend that they were George Michael's towels. And maybe they weren't, if you did a DNA test.
Did you fake George Michael's sweaty towels?
I think maybe I did, yeah. Sometimes. I didn't need to. He was in a lot. I mean, I only did it sometimes. It's awful. We've all made mistakes, Jay.
Yeah, well, you know, I've never made any mistakes like that, Jay.
Hello, it's Ollie here. I'm the executive producer on Out to Lunch. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, one of the relationships I'm proudest of in my life is with my daughters. They're not quite the age to go for fancy lunches with celebs yet, but we do enjoy our family dinners together in relative harmony. You know, give us time, that they are still quite young. But this takes work, and it's a mistake to think that relationships have to be easy to be right. The best relationships come out of learning to live with each other and keeping our sense of humour, even when food is spilt all over the table or dinner's not to everyone's liking. It can be really tricky, but therapy can help you with those skills. You can work through parenting challenges, explore seeing eye to eye as a couple, and work through your relationship with yourself too. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's flexible, and you can switch therapists at any time, as that's a relationship that needs to be the right fit too. Become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit betterhelp.com/outtolunch today and get 10% off your first month.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hello, dear lunchers. A quick word about something rather exciting. It's a new range of Out to Lunch merchandise that has landed, and it's ready for you to get your greedy mitts on. I've got it here. There's a smart-looking apron in rugged denim with pockets. From now on, I'll wear nothing else. A brilliantly made travel cup. We all need to drink on the go. Water, wine, put what you like in it. I don't care. I'm not your dad. And a beautifully soft tea towel, so you can think of me while you caress your finest kitchenware. These are quality items, people. The kind of things the one Once you've used, you'll be dreaming of using again and again, and branded with your favourite podcast too. What's not to love? To browse the range and purchase to your heart's content, head to outtolunch.backstreetmerch.com. That's outtolunch, all one word, .backstreetmerch, all one word, .com. Get them while they're hot, cold or tepid, and do tweet me your photos showing them off too. But now, it's back to lunch. You should definitely try the
yes,
the aubergine.
Ah, here it is. Oh, I love aubergine.
It would be number 2A, I think.
I'm trying this aubergine now.
Could you give us the full MasterChef description?
It's warm. I'm getting now a slow burn coming through that I can manage because it's slow, and there's maybe cinnamon, there's tomato, but the hero of this are these huge chunks of soft aubergine with a sort of slightly, this is where I'm not going to go master, slightly leathery skin, but in a good way, like delicious, really delicious. I love aubergines.
I think one of the things about aubergine is that it can give a sort of substance to non-meat cookery.
If the skin hangs onto itself, onto its own identity, it won't go too mushy. So exactly that. Delicious. I mean, heat is I think it's good when it takes its time, because then you can sort of get used to it. Also, I don't want to go into this, Jay, but for a perimenopausal woman, I've got to be careful with these hot dishes, you know.
What, in case they encourage a bit of a flush?
Yes, yes.
When I was a kid, one of my jobs was sending out the leaflets that my mother would dispatch to the nation as an agony aunt.
Oh, yes.
And one of them was on the menopause. And I've always said that as a 10-year-old, I could spot the symptoms of the menopause.
Oh, that's
from 50
adorable.
Paces, which was great as a 10-year-old, but less useful to me now.
Well, use all your knowledge with me, because it's happening. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, darling. You've described your 20s as being miserable. At any point did you think, I'm just going to leave this business? You had a bloke at that time. You and James Purfoy had been together since you were practically kids.
Yeah.
And that ended when you were about 27, is that right?
Something like that, yeah. Yeah, I think that might have had something to do with the fact that my 20s were difficult, but yes.
A relationship that just went on longer than it possibly should have done after you told each other all the things you needed to know.
When you meet someone when you're very young, you make those very grown-up decisions, and then you sort of grow up and you're sort of... But you made them when you were a kid, you know, and you're sort of slightly stuck with them, with those decisions, not the actual person or whatever it is. So, you know, alongside that, I was... definitely, I think, feeling like a failure. I think that from those early days at the convent, you know, it's not really about you, Faye, about what you want to do. It's very much about where you'll find yourself through your privilege. You know, if I made it in whatever I did, it would be against all the odds, sort of thing. You get the payoff later, because now, you know, I'm a self-made woman who's had no help from anybody, didn't steal the necklace, you know, and there's a pride that comes with having felt a failure and then not being a failure in your own eyes. I mean, you know,
there's no doubt that the business was tough for you. There's the famous story, you shot two scenes in Frankenstein, once being assaulted by Robert De Niro's double. This is Branagh's Frankenstein. The other one, dead on a slab with De Niro. And what happened?
I found yesterday, I was going through some stuff, I found a note And it was October 21st, 94. It says, okay. Dearest Faye, I am so underlined sorry that your wonderful prostitute has not made it into the final cut of Frankenstein. It continues, very sweet. And then, I owe you a drink. Much love, Kenneth Branagh. So
both those scenes just went from the film. And, yeah. And it must have, when you got that gig, it must have felt like a huge thing. I'm in a major motion picture with Robert De Niro, directed by Kenneth Branagh.
It was going to be the turning point in my career. It needs to be said, I, in my 20s, only played sex workers. That was all I did. So I was hoping to take my prostitutes to another level through this film.
So when the script for the pilot of Cold Feet turned up, did you... And I know actors are asked this all the time, once they've ended up in a hit. Did you look at that and go, well, that's beautifully written. That's got hit written all over it. This is going somewhere. Did you just go, oh, I'll read this part and see what happens?
Honestly, I thought it was brilliant. We all did. I didn't think it would be a hit because you're not thinking that, but you are reading it going, oh, I really, really want to be in this. I mean, I read it and thought I was going to read for the part of Rachel, which was the sort of pretty love interest, you know, got everyone fancies her sort of thing. And I was quite shocked when they went, can you read for Jenny? And I was like, what? Jenny? What? The sort of mouthy northern one. Now I'm very pleased that I played Jenny. And we made a pilot and it sort of failed. And we were really shocked, but it went out at a bad time. There's some scheduling thing. And then it won an award, the Silver Rose at Montreux. And then they replayed it and it did well. And then the sort of rolling ball of filming and making one series after another sort of kind of started to kick in.
All of you became very well known very quickly. Was that satisfying? Was it shocking? Was it scary? Was it just good?
Life definitely at that point was on an upward trajectory. I mean, it was great. It happened slower in real life than it appeared to. We never knew if it would be recommissioned. There was never a single series, as long as we've been doing it all these years, and it was 25 years ago we started it, whatever it was, we've only ever said goodbye at the end of filming going, oh, hopefully see you again, but don't know. But there was definitely a point at which, you know, you're recognised in the street and you have paid off a bit of your mortgage and you feel like, oh, okay, now I'm a grown-up.
Famously, after, was it three series, you asked Mike Bullen to write you out and to kill off your character.
Yeah.
And he refused and sent you to New York instead. Given that it really did come back after, 15 years, are you unendingly grateful to Mike that he didn't kill your character?
I think I sent him an email that said, phew. quite pleased that mouthy Ripley, who went, yeah, you just need to kill me off because I'll probably win an award, that they just went, one, you're not going to win an award, and two, no, you might be useful in the future.
When my dear old mum was working on Woman's Own magazine, she once told me, when I sort of became a journalist, that there were two sorts of features in Woman's Own in the 70s, 80s and 90s, and there were either womb tremblers or triumph over torment. So womb tremblers were about, you know, the search for motherhood, and triumph over torment was, I have had cancer and I've survived. Basically, Jenny Gifford has been both womb trembler and triumph over torment.
Yes, and many other things. But yes, I mean, there was a time where I felt that Jenny Gifford was doing a lot of washing up. I mean, I did slightly fight that. There was too many scenes with me with white wine and washing up. Again, it goes back to this thing of going, look, just because I'm a woman, my storyline doesn't have to involve getting drunk and washing up. And
was Jimmy Nesbitt ever seen washing up?
I'm going to say that Jimmy, the nearest Jimmy has got to that is loading a dishwasher.
And then feeling victorious because he's actually done something.
Maybe.
In the days before lockdown, we attend the same gym across the road, Jimmy and I.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I can raise this question as to whether that would probably be the most irritating question he could be asked in the middle of a gym.
Can I tell you my gym stories? I've only belonged to one gym, and that was when I was courting my now husband, and he's a bit younger than me and very wonderful to look at and very fit, and I wasn't any of those. And I joined a gym every morning. You go, oh, it's amazing. You're going to the gym every day. That's really great. But he then said, but you're not, like, it's not really toning you at all. And I had to admit that I'd only joined the gym so I could go and have a poo.
What, because you didn't want to,
yeah,
to do that at home?
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it your house?
So I never worked out. I was staying with him and had to, like, just go, oh, I'm going to the gym. So I didn't use his bathroom. I mean, I know it's really an intimate sort of discussion, this, but it is true. Anyway, it was a really expensive gym. That is the other sort of detail that needs to be said.
So you've raised it, Faye, so we're now going to drill down on this because I've finished eating. So you had this thing, you could be as intimate as you liked in bed. I'm assuming that you and Dan LaPayne, also an actor, always credited with being the sexy one in Speedos in Muriel's Wedding.
Yeah, he was very young, but yes, that's him, yeah.
Yeah, and you could do many things with, I don't need details, but the one thing you couldn't do was going to the loo.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I didn't want to spoil the magic, Jay.
Didn't you not also think when you first met him that he was so beautiful and so charismatic and so nice to you that the only conclusion was that he was gay?
He really hates this story. I'm going to
Do you want to get him down and we could just...
He doesn't find this story as funny as I do.
Everybody else does.
I need to make it very clear that it says something about me, not him.
Yes,
and
yes,
what it says about me clearly is that I still don't, you know, slightly believe that somebody who is so wonderful in all ways would want this schmuck. You know, it's that. It's like, oh, what, me? You know, also, you have to understand, at that point, I had been single for quite a while and all I knew was gay men. I am still surrounded by gay men and that is my comfort zone.
It was an obvious assumption.
It was an obvious assumption.
You've actually said that you love cooking for gay men because they're... So many of your gay friends, because they're so effusive about your performance.
Although quite competitive, I'm going to say, of my gay male friends, but in particular, in my 20s, I didn't go out. I didn't really do the stuff you're meant to do. I don't know, the sex and drugs and rock and roll, because I was making souffles, because it was about showing off to my gay mates. And it was like, oh, right, have you made the Delia peppers? Right. How did that go? You know, so it's sort of, we were out.
Oh, so they're all cooking
we
as well.
We were all out cooking each other. And we were throwing dinner parties because at that time there was a sort of choice. Do you want to go out and behave like an actual 20-year-old or do you want to behave like a 40-year-old, which is what I was doing. Not unexpectedly, when I got to 40, I then went, I'm definitely going to take drugs now. I mean, I'm definitely going to behave like a 20-year-old or something. I've got to do something.
The cooking thing, obviously, you mean it. You're serious about it. You've published 3 books that have done very nicely indeed. Faye's Family Food, What's for Dinner, Faye Makes It Easy. Where does the interest in cooking come from? Is it pure greed or is there an interest in control? The wonderful thing, I think, about cooking is you take control of the world around you through it.
100% right. And highly astute of you. I think the reason it happened when it happened is because I had young children to feed and a family. And it was that sense of control, of safety, of, yes, nurturing and all that. But also, it was also a bit of the actress. You know, I cook to
There's
get
performance
around.
In there, as well.
There really is. I require a round of applause for my boiled eggs because I present them really well and they're very good boiled eggs. Why wouldn't you clap? I've always loved food. I love eating food. That's at the very core. I have always enjoyed everything I put in my mouth. That's going to be a headline. But
I was trying the Alan Wicker silence so that you know,
so
just
much.
Let you hang yourself there. But couldn't keep it down. The great Danny Kaye, golden era Hollywood actor, had his kitchen built as an auditorium. There was seating, there was raked seating so they could watch him cook.
That's extraordinary.
It's an extraordinary story. I tried to find the kitchen in LA, in Bel Air, and I couldn't. But I think the house had eventually been knocked down. I just found the idea of this auditorium for kitchen. How did the cookbook happen? Did your acting agent say to you, you know, you should do a book? Or did you go to your acting agent who had a colleague who did books?
No, my acting agent will have told me not to. People look down on me for writing cookbooks.
Do they?
Yes, definitely. The idea that
it's
an actor
very hard.
Can multitask, it confuses people. I have always made decisions that haven't necessarily been the sort of straightforward actor's choices, whether that's I did adverts before people did adverts, so they looked down on that, or wrote those cookbooks. No one came to me and said, why don't you write a cookbook?
Is there a particular dish that you think sums up your cooking style? Something you've written recipe for that you think really that is pure Faye Ripley?
I mean, an easy cake would probably be it, because it is slightly about cutting corners. And that's a bit what I'm like in my life. It's a bit all show and no knickers, or whatever that expression is. By the way, I have
fur coat and no knickers.
Yeah, that's it. My husband's family lived in Italy. He's half Italian. And I remember I was boxing up all my baby's pureed food into Tupperware and flying it with us to Italy to eat. And I suddenly went, why don't you give my child the lovely, fresh Italian food that's on the table? Why am I mushing it 2 weeks ago and then, you know, freezing it and taking it? The concept, which is not a new concept, but the concept of you all eat the same food, no matter what the age is, you just slightly adapt it and all that. And it wasn't really covered off. There was very much a separation. Babies eat that, adults eat that. And then all these fussy eaters appear and you go, well, obviously you haven't been feeding your children adult food. I mean, yeah, of course no, they're not going to accept it. So I started, the first book was very much about feeding your young children. And then as my children grew up, my cookbooks went with them and it became about easy family food, really.
You've mentioned cake, so I think I need to point you at box 3.
Whoa. Yes, please.
So I have a walnut brownie and you have gulab jamun. Do you know gulab jamun?
Okay.
It should be a little round syrup-soaked sponge.
Yeah, I'm going to show you what look very much like testicles. Hang on.
So they should.
Yes, there's like a syrup. Hang on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, dear God. Thank you so much. Jay. Well, it's like a sort of golden syrup, old-fashioned ball, pudding ball. That's not described anything, but it is. Yeah.
That's not getting you the gig on MasterChef either.
No, that's really not. But oh boy, is that, I'm sinking into that ball.
I think you probably are.
It's so good. And I'll be honest, I never know what to order for pudding in Indian restaurants. So that's what I'm going to order.
Gulab jamun.
That's so good.
But the control thing is definitely a part of it, isn't it? Cooking.
It's just,
you take a bunch of ingredients, you bend them to your will.
I wasn't very good at improvising because I would, as you say, you get a bunch of ingredients and you make it into something. And I didn't want to disappoint myself. So I would always stick to recipes. And now through confidence and having written 3 cookbooks, so that's 350 recipes up my sleeve, then you can improvise.
You've been asked to do TV cookery and you've always said no. Is it because you don't really want to have to get into a conversation with other people? You just want it to be yours?
It's a fine line, I think. I think that people, if I stepped over the line and became a proper TV cook face, you know, then I'm not allowed to put on funny accents and sort of, you know, and silly hats. When somebody comes up to me in the street and says, oh, I really like you in that show, it's lovely. Obviously, people are always nice to me. When they come up and say that my lemon chicken is the first thing they've ever cooked, and now they cook for their family from scratch every single day, and that lemon chicken was the turning point, I cry. So it's like, it's so meaningful. Food is so meaningful.
I have to say, so you really didn't give us any dietaries at all. Eats food, I think, was literally what was sent back to us.
Yum.
But if you had been realistic, it would have said not too spicy and try to avoid dairy. And we've sent you Indian food, including dairy. How's it worked out for you?
Amazing. When and if they are open for business, they'll be the first on my list for a visit. Delicious.
Right, so Benares has done us proud, I have to say. My lamb shank nihari and my dal and all of that was all fabulous as well. So all that actually remains for me to say is, Faye Ripley, thank you for staying in for lunch with me. And when this is all over, let's go out for lunch.
Oh, I thought you'd never ask. Thank you.
Thank you. Faye Ripley there, telling us all the good stuff. Today, both of us were fed, and fed exceedingly well, I should say, courtesy of the marvellous Benares in London's Mayfair, which has now reopened for business. Visit Benares Restaurant, alloneword.com, and Benares is spelt B-E-N-A-R-E-S. So BenaresRestaurant.com for all the vital information. And if you'd like another serving, do peruse our wonderful menu of previous guests on Out to Lunch. There's something to please everyone's palate. You can find them wherever you get your podcasts. And please remember to give us a virtual high five in the form of sharing, comments and ratings. We do love to know what you think. Out to Lunch is a Something Else and Jay Rayner production. The music was written, arranged and performed by me, Jay Rayner, and Robert Rickenberg. The mix engineer was Josh Gibbs. The assistant producer was Jemima Rathbone. The producer is Selena Ream. And the executive producer is Darby Doris. Additional production is from Steve Ackerman. Next time, I'll be in for lunch with comedian Shappi Khorsandi.
I didn't ask. You know, I just introduced you to my girlfriend. When you introduced me to your boyfriend, I didn't usher you off into a corner. Yeah, I could kiss him. I couldn't suck him off. You just wouldn't say that to me.